This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Bill Gormley. Bill is the chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And the coalition is coming off its spring conference last week, Thursday and Friday, April 26th and 27th. And by way of introduction, I'm also the president of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And Bill, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Roger. Thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate being here.
Well, Bill, the conference got a fair amount of press, I would have to say. And in particular, the first day we had a keynote speaker, the Honorable Jeff Denham. He's a congressman from California, and he's the chairman of the Subcommittee on Economic Development, Public Buildings, and Energy Management. And it's kind of ironic because we had invited him months ago, back in December, November timeframe, to talk about civilian BRAC and where that's going, because that's one of he's a chief supporter and sponsor of legislation that would potentially implement an approach towards consolidation of civilian real property. And you know, well before the latest events, and his message at the conference was certainly eye opening. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think, thank you, Roger. And I'm going to kind of back up just for a moment, and I'll come to that. But I think the conference that that you hosted last week, was the government, acquisition market, and how do you grow your slice of the pie? And I think there was as we go through this discussion today, I think there are differences. We think of a pie as having all the same ingredients. I think each slice had a different ingredient here. So we'll talk politics. It's an election year. That's part of a slice of a pie. A little different than in your traditional
banana cream pie. A little piece of that. Some blueberry pie. Yeah, strawberry, right? Rhubarb pie.
Yeah, it was a mixed pie. But I think getting back to the Jeff Denham, the congressman, I think it's. I think we would all agree that what occurred at GSA is clearly from a management standpoint is being addressed, and it's just unfortunate that number one it happened, but number two it happened in election year, and you can see the parties are really trying to use examples of mismanagement here to be across government, which is absolutely false. And I think all due respect to the congressman and his remarks that he's really concerned about GSA overall. I think what I was most proud of, Rogers, members of the coalition from an industry standpoint, asked questions of the congressman regarding GSA. Was he aware that GSA was very efficient? And I use the word efficient again here, in areas of fleet. And in the credit card airlines, the schedules program. So there's a multitude of areas that GSA contributes to the care and feeding of government every day, and that's their mission. So I think it was the congressman came out kind of with dual exhaust, so to speak. I think he turned into kind of a hybrid at the end there. He kind of slowed up a little bit and was more willing to listen, because he could see that the audience was very well educated on GSA, and all due respect, more so than he, because of the industry's background. So I think it was an initial shock when he said he felt the GSA should be outsourced or didn't need to be around, and I thought that was total opportunity for a political grab. And I think what was of very interest is he did welcome the coalition to come up and meet with him and his staff to talk about GSA. And I think that's clearly an initiative that we're going to take and with members and go up there and provide an education and obviously have a dialogue with him.
Well, yeah, and I just on that, I think, I mean, I just my reaction to it is when he addressed whether GSA ought to be outsourced or not, I think it sort of galvanized the room, and I think it was, you know, in a certain sense, in a certain way, a good thing to do because I every once in a while agencies do have to sort of justify why they're around and what they do, and that's appropriate. Those are appropriate questions. I mean, as you indicated, I agree. I think GSA does a great job in managing many programs. They provide value for customer agencies and ultimately for the taxpayer. And it's important that dialogue. It's almost like a Mythbusters campaign for GSA. What do
Congress,
you think?
With Congress. Yeah, I think that's a good take on it. Because I think what became evident from some of the questions and when he asked for questions from the audience, Rogers, is it became fairly clear that while the congressman was quick to highlight from his perspective the inefficiencies, I think the attendees at the conference were trying to be as polite as they could, but a lot of the inefficiencies of property disposal are really impeded by what Congress has.
Congressional mandates,
congressional
right?
Mandates. Yeah. So it's like, okay, if you're going to talk about this, let's get it all out there. And I think the congressman picked up on that pretty quick and kind of just recognized if we're an impediment, then we need to know about it. So I'm sure some changes will come out of this. And I think the key is to look for a silver lining and create an opportunity out of which was not a good couple weeks for GSA. So, I mean, I think GSA overall is moving forward. Dan Tangerlini, the new acting administrator, has a very good track record on public policy from a management standpoint. And I think he'll be making the changes that he's made already and just get the agency back into, you know, fulfilling its mission and moving it forward.
Yeah, and just to finish that up, I think it is to the congressman's credit that he did ask for feedback and information and recommendations about GSA, and I think that's important. You know, if the effort here is sort of collectively, we all have, to a certain extent, we all have the all same goal: how do we do better for the American taxpayer? And if there's recommendations on how GSA could, you know, improve on its, you know, operations, you know, even, you know, granted they already are pretty efficient in many areas. But if there's things that can be done, I think that's a positive dialogue to have in the long run. So, you know, with regard to the conference as well, I know there was a great deal of discussion about how GSA plays its central role in procurement and the schedules program. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think the schedules program overall, the intent of it. And when it was founded, before really GSA, is to provide access, provide commercial practices, products and services to commercial services and products that are available commercially to the government. So that demand has just increasing in the government's interest in the schedules program has increased to the point where between VA and GSA, it's about almost a $50 billion annual program. So I think the schedules clearly have provided an excellent platform on which the government can acquire those commercial services and products. And when you think about it, Roger, anytime that there's regardless of what administration, anytime that there's kind of a new idea or let's try something,
let's do something different or innovative or whatever,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. You know, it's inevitable that if someone ends up doing a BPA off the schedules program. So
to accomplish that, yeah, that's right. You're right about that. And then we see it now with cloud computing, right?
Exactly.
And the federal strategic sourcing initiatives are utilizing the GSA schedules, and even the latest one, the cell phone, device
wireless,
ones,
wireless devices.
Ones. It's a better language, right? And we could say wireless. That's a little bit more,
showing your age here.
That's right. That's right. Still calling cell phones, right? So, you know, when we're about to take a break, Bill, but, when we do come back, I want to keep that conversation going with regard to the schedules program. So we had Steve Kemp as commissioner of the Federal Acquisition Service talk about the next generation schedules, and I'd like to get your take on what you think, you know, things that could be done to improve the effectiveness of the GSA Schedules program. But again, right now we do have to take a break. And when we come back, I'll be talking more to Bill Gormley, chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and we'll be talking about next generation GSA schedules. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Hahn Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Hahn's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. All meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Hahn Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Hahn's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Hahn lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Hahn Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
And now, Technology Insights with Tom Frana, President and CEO of Vion, speaking with John Gehring, former CIO and Director of Strategic Planning for DISA, and now an executive at Vion.
Is there a benefit that you never thought you'd ever see come out of the capacity services model?
One is, although we anticipated this, I'm not sure we understood it, is unleashing the engineering talent in the service providers. I don't think we understood the talent that's in the break-fix crew, the field engineers, and the talent that's in the systems engineers. So as we faced challenges, it became a team sport. It wasn't us having to solve, let alone buying equipment and speccing it. If we had a problem, the solutions seemed to be easier because we could draw on the talent in the company that was the managed service provider.
For over 32 years, Vion has been the storage experts by providing unsurpassed level of customer service, partnering with innovative technology partners like Hitachi Data Systems. To learn more, visit booth 637 at the DISA Mission Partner Conference in Tampa, May 7th through 10th.
Here's Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Gribshaw, CIO G6 ADCCP Team Army, on the Federal Executive Forum on Virtualization, sponsored by Red Hat.
We're going to get security actually baked into our operating environments. Instead of trying to do it all individually, it's going to be part of that standard software stack that will really enable users to focus on the capability and not to worry about all of the infrastructure underneath it.
Listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group. Log on to federalnewsradio.com.
There are a lot of virtualization solutions out there from proprietary companies, but they are expensive and lock you into long-term relationships with vendors that you might not want. But Red Hat Enterprise Virtualization is a highly secure open-source platform for mission-critical workloads. Red Hat technology is based on open standards, so your IT future still belongs to you. And if you're ready to start cloud computing, this is the way to do it. 90% of public clouds already run on open source. This is Paul Smith from Red Hat, and if you want to learn more from the open source leader, check us out at redhat.com/virtualized.
Many factors affect job satisfaction. Hours, teammates, and opportunity can all make or break an experience. That's why it was an impressive achievement when 100% of employees surveyed recently reported they were proud to work for Acuity Inc. With a 766% growth rate and recognition as a best place to work, Acuity is attracting talented, passionate professionals and keeping them happy. Learn more. Visit myacuity.com/careers.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, That moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're talking to Bill Gormley, the chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and we're talking about the coalition's spring conference last week. And Bill, when we took a break, we just started talking about the GSA Schedules Program. And as I mentioned last week, Steve Kemp, who's the commissioner for the Federal Acquisition Service, talked a bit about the next generation of the GSA Schedules Program. And I'm just going to open it up for you and step back and listen. But can you talk about what you see as the next generation schedules or where that S-curve needs to go?
Right. There you go. I love the S-curves. I can have a whole program on S-curves someday. Anyway, I think that from a next-gen standpoint, I'm glad to hear that Steve and his organization is looking at the next gen, as they call it, generation of schedules. I think one of the things to keep in mind that and I'm not going to revert too much back to the past, but I think one of the key things is how to make the schedules simpler, if I could call it that way. I hate to use that term, but simpler. And what I mean by that is, with the change of technologies and the way business transactions occur today, I think there's in their review there, I would hope that there'd be a great opportunity to simplify the amount of information that's necessary in order to get a GSA schedule contract and recognize the program for what it is. It's not when contracts are awarded under the conditions that they're awarded in Roger, it is not the best price that government's going to receive. And it's a fair price that the contracts or a discount that these contracts are awarded. And I think there's always, for some reason, there's a mystery around, the schedule.
One of those myths, right?
It's a myth, right? So exactly. Thank you. And, so I hope they can address that myth, but keep things simpler as far as the transaction sets and data collection and so forth. Let's stick to, the real intent of the program is to use commercial data in order to drive fair and reasonable price to get a GSA schedule contract award. And then, from that, really leverage the opportunity for government to get a good deal. And I know everybody's focused on price, and they should be, as hard-earned taxpayer money. But the value of an acquisition, the pricing value, as well as the quality, but in the case of pricing, really occurs at the time of sale, actual sale. And
which so, in the schedules program, right, is that task order competition these days, right?
Exactly.
Or delivery order competition.
Exactly. So, let's look at the fact that, to your point, they have to have this competition. Again, after the award for the task orders, is the initial pricing up front going to be that critical from a compliance standpoint, I'll say. And I think that's a tricky one to have to address, Roger, but I really think with the effort that GSA can put into this, it's again a multi-billion dollar program, so hopefully they will put that in there. Keep it simple, keep it transparent, all the terms people are using now, but at the end of the day, I think the program is getting too weighed down, and the compliance side is going to have a cost element to this that I think could affect competition over time, and I think that's not what GSA is looking to have occur.
Right. It just seems to me that, given the way the market has changed, the commercial marketplace has changed especially over the last 10 years, and the rapidity, the rapidness of the change with the internet and the way people compete, it's different model commercially than, when the schedules basic pricing policies were first adopted. And, nobody's saying they shouldn't negotiate a good price up front, a fair and reasonable price, but ultimately, the price now is being driven in the marketplace, and that marketplace is that post-contract award, sphere or environment where people have to compete for orders, or people are surveying GSA Advantage and comparing and, doing that online shopping.
Sure, but also, yeah, there's other risk elements in there. It is a relationship between a company and the federal government. And I think on the compliance side, you know, companies have compliance. Many of them have compliance programs. They have their certs and reps, and then they're expected to keep documents for after the contract expires for X number of years. So there's a cost to this, and I think GSA does have to try and recognize all of that. So I think the upfront investment by industry and this administration, as well as others, have always tried to increase the participation of small businesses. Well, the Schedules program, you know, from has demonstrated it's in the 30-33% actual sales that small businesses receive year in and year out, where 23% is government wide, and you have the other subcategories of socioeconomic. And I don't want to get all excited here and go down this lane here, but I mean the program is a great program for all parties involved. And I think the fact that Steve's taken, I won't call it a timeout, but is setting aside some resources to look at it and say, I hope, how can we streamline this from both partner standpoint, our industry partner and our customer partners.
Right. And, you know, I think, you know, that platform for streamlining it, or the timing of streamlining it, is now. The fact that you've got these competition requirements at the task order level, it's almost like you're washing away all these other things, because that's where the prices are being driven. So you have the ability or the framework that allows you to eliminate a lot of these compliance things because you are relying on that competition.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think with the ever-changing face of the acquisition market, the workforce, you know, while we say maybe getting younger, part of that is the technology. You have kind of a technology creep into the acquisition side that from a traditional standpoint of doing evaluation awards, that's going to be a whole, I can see where that would go to a whole nother level. And I think by doing this online, more of an electronic world, would keep pace and would put enough market pressures on there to, for the government to get a very, very good deal. And so I think this is a great opportunity, great opportunity.
Yeah. And isn't it now, let me get the numbers right in terms of schedules numbers. It's GSA schedules do about $40 billion, and the VA schedules do about $10 billion. Is
right.
that right?
Yeah, you're within $500 million, you know, of each. But that's, yeah, you're right, and so it's pretty significant. And you know, GSA has 31 different schedule programs. I think VA has 6 or something. So, you know, we could talk, you know, VA. You know, Jan Fry was at the meeting as well at the conference. We can get into his side of it. But in regards to FAS, which is the policy
driver,
so to speak, thank you, for the schedules program, both for VA and GSA, and also from a system standpoint. So I think in training and all that goes with it. So, you know, their surcharge, I think it's 0.75%. You know, some people get all excited about that, but that you're not going to go anywhere and run a business on 0.75% and be as successful as GSA has been.
Right, and GSA, they operate, the Federal Acquisition Service does not receive appropriation there.
Exactly.
Funded through the industrial funding fee. Mm-hmm. And just to your point, just a final point on the, you know, and streamlining that process, you know, the schedules do have a great track record in supporting small business, but, you know, when you start talking about infrastructure to maintain compliance with, you know, unique contract requirements, you know, that's a tougher challenge for small businesses than even for large businesses, right? Large businesses have those, who are in the government contract business, have those infrastructures in place. If you want to get even greater opportunities for small business and reduce their costs and increase their ability to compete, I think that, you know, again, Steve's look at, you know, the next generation is an opportunity there as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't, and I hear you, I wouldn't maybe disagree with you a little bit here, but large business.
That's what the show's all about, Bill. Here we do that every day.
Yeah, that's right. It's good, makes everybody better. Anyway, there's still a cost. While large business, you know, people have that perception large can and has a bigger checkbook than small. But I can guarantee you the decisions are just as controversial or very high in discussion, whether it's large or small business, about investment. So it costs all businesses money. There's a cost of, there's a recognizable cost of entering into federal procurement. But I also think there's an added cost that from a compliance standpoint or burden or data collection that GSA should take a look at. And to your point, Roger, yeah, it would really benefit, the small businesses and the mid-sized businesses, but it benefits all by keeping a level playing field for the data side. So
And Bill, right now, you know, we have costs here too, so we do have to take a break.
Come on, go to extra innings.
Yeah. But when we come back, we'll be talking more with Bill Gormley, chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and we'll talk a little bit about low-price technically acceptable awards and what's going on at the VA as well. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Hahn Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Hahn's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. All meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Hahn Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Hahn's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Hahn lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Hahn Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today. Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Is your agency using the hidden benefits of telework? Learn how telework supports transparency, cost reduction, and collaboration in government with Naomi Leventhal, leader of Deloitte's Workforce Flexibility Initiative, and Jim Reedy, leader of the Real Estate and Location Strategy Practice at Deloitte. Tune in with host Jane Norris on Deloitte's Fed Central, Thursday, May 3rd and 15th at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Deborah Roth will be joined by Craig Floyd from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund and David Wise from Motorola to discuss this year's National Police Week.
Federally employed women, FEW, the organization of choice for leadership, equity, and the advancement of women, would like to extend an invitation to FEW's 43rd National Training Program, NTP, Wheels of Change Keep on Moving, in Detroit, Michigan, July 16 through 20. The NTP is the largest training opportunity in the world for women in federal employment. The training program will include training tracks to better train employees in the following subjects: executive leadership, science and technology, project management, human resources, and more. In addition, the Office of Personnel Management, OPM, EEOC, and many more agencies will be on hand, so networking opportunities will be endless. Meet other government employees at all grade levels and ranks from across the nation. The 2012 NTP program Wheels of Change Keep On Moving, held in Detroit July 16 through 20, is for you. So for more details or to sign up, please call 202-898-0994 or visit few.org. That's FEW.org.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Fly a kite and you get a good feel for how much force can be created by a lightweight aircraft. That's the idea behind a new system for getting power from wind. Winds are generally stronger and more consistent further from the ground. So Makani Power is launching propeller-controlled aircraft to tap that energy. Mechanical engineer Corwin Hardam is their CEO.
The thing that is different with our aircraft is ours is tied to the ground with a flexible tether. And that energy gets piped down the tether to the ground.
And one day, to the grid. It's a computer-guided kite engineered to fly itself in a nearly circular path.
Because that's one of the most effective paths for generating energy.
Hardam says the system is about 90% lighter than conventional wind turbines and can be more easily installed in a wider range of locations.
We expect to be cost competitive with the cheapest of the fossil fuel energy sources.
For more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Bill Gormley, Chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and we're talking little procurement issues coming out of the Coalition Spring Conference last week. And Bill, could you talk, we had at the conference Jan Fry. Jan is the Deputy Assistant Secretary, Office of Acquisition and Logistics at the Department of Veteran Affairs. And the VA has a growing role in GSA's schedules program, or in the schedules program, manages its own schedules. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I actually had the opportunity to be the moderator with Jan, and I know I think he was on your show earlier.
Yeah, last spring. I invited him back. Hopefully, he'll come back and talk about what the VA is up to.
All the
good things are up to.
Right.
Listening, Jan.
What I love about Jan Fry is he is one passionate rascal as far as acquisition.
Absolutely.
And I think that, some people get excited about it. He's very passionate and he's very direct. And he clearly has made significant change, he and his management team and just his whole organization. So he's really taken on.
So you've got positive change for that organization's operations.
And he's looking to continue that. We got into a couple areas. One was in the whole pricing area, Roger, different ways to approach pricing, and to VA's credit, they had been a heavy implementer initially of auctions, mm-hmm. and I guess he looked at that after some time had gone by. I think put a moratorium on that for a while. I know that kind of upsets maybe some people in the market or people on the Hill. But I think it's important that what he's doing. He has enough data to say, Is this worth, continuing? Because it does, the interesting part here is, and I think his objective is we want to know what we're doing. And I think he felt that parts of the organization may have become too lax and basically handing work over to a third party or third parties. And so I think he would do what anybody on the Hill would expect, leaders in government to do is periodically take a time out and say, hey, is this working or not? And if it is, go forward. If it isn't, make it better and try it again or try other things. So I think, to his credit, he's doing that. Now, the other side on the pure pricing side, we had a pretty good dialogue on low price technically acceptable, LPTA. And he was pretty interesting. And I would agree with him, but I waited for him to take the position.
politically smart, right?
And then I would have said what my feelings are. But anyway, I think there's this, I don't know how to describe it, Roger, but there's this kind of feeling that the government, is moving towards this low price technically acceptable. And I And there is nothing that talks about low price that we acceptable really from a regulatory standpoint. And so I think it's a label that's gotten picked up, and I don't know whether from a, you know, an industry or just acquisition discussions, it's become an identifier that I think at the end of the day, the government wants best value and price is a part of that. So Jan was pretty clear. He would never put anything out regarding low price technically acceptable, because he knows once you put some type of definition or policy, that, you know, there's just a human instinct to follow that. And there's really a, you know, as you know, Roger, you and I both from our backgrounds is in contracting, you know, judgment has a lot to do with, you know, the ultimate decision that you make, and you have judgment, and don't take that judgment away from the contracting officers. I think Jan's very sensitive to that, and indicated that he would not, you know, obviously he's interested in saving every penny and dollar VA, and because that of which he saves goes to help the veterans, which is the correct thing to do. But on the other hand, he's not that's going to go for low bid on everything and provide a poor quality of equipment or services to veterans. So, you know, I had a lot of respect for him, and he's you know, he's taken on the a full load of changes within his organization, and he's got a lot of irons in the fire right now. But in the schedules area, more specific, you know, he is clearly looking at ways to improve the relationships with industry from his Hines, Illinois office, I guess, where they run the schedules, Rogers,
yes,
you know.
Yes, that's where it is, yep.
And so, you know, he laid it out there to industry. He says, you know, we're here, you know, any problems, and we're looking at ways that we should be returning phone calls. Some fundamental services that he's taken on and talking publicly about instead of having to go to the Hill and talk about them.
Well, yeah, and, you know, that's sort of like, that's the whole idea behind Mythbusters in part, right? That better communication between government and industry. And, you know, just getting back to low price technically acceptable, I think it's, you know, it's fair to say it's one of the tools in the toolbox. And to your point about contracting officer discretion, you know, the COs and acquisition strategies have to figure out what's the best way to go, you know, looking at history, looking at, or even taking those timeouts that you mentioned, and figuring out what's the right way to handle this or to conduct this particular procurement, because there may be situations where low price technically acceptable works depending on the nature of the requirements and if they're well articulated. In other cases, it's clearly, you know, it is a best value, best value situation.
Yeah, I think the when you get into part number procurements or product number, something like that, then, you know, everybody's dealing with the absolute same all the way around. You know, maybe delivery could be different or something, but at the end of the day, those are would be candidates for low price. But I think when you look at, you know, the major procurements and an idea, just as we're sitting here in the radio station, Rogers, is, you know, an idea, maybe government starts to put the government has to fund, has to have funding for requirements, and the program managers should be coming up with known estimates on what their requirement is funded at. Maybe the government starts actually posting the not to exceed funding in a requirement. So then industry can see what an SOW,
what the purchasing profile is,
right? Yeah. Just say, hey, we're not going to pay more than this, and nobody bids, and that means the government's estimate was off, and then it makes them go back. So, you know, I think these are opportunities because of the electronic, you know, environment we're in. I think the government and industry should be willing to maybe post that there what the value of a program is that they're going to do a task order on. And because I think it actually, I think there's actually a false sense of competition, Roger, when you do low price technically acceptable.
Isn't it really about the idea, you know, when you define your requirements, you can either define them narrowly and have a focused competition that may go on price, or the requirements lend themselves to different solutions, some that may be more efficient than others. And if you're going low price technically acceptable on those ones, that's where you start limiting the competition.
Hey, if the government went to buy a lawnmower,
yeah,
there's a push mower.
Yes,
it goes all the way up to zero turn. So if the government, maybe where they're going to mow the lawn couldn't accommodate a zero turn, but it's a little bit bigger than a push than someone at a riding mower or a push. So you get different levels here. It's just as I know that's
right.
Kind
and then
of
it goes to how quickly you can mow the lawn exactly. and all that exactly. kind of stuff, so, whether it's more efficient and that yeah. saves money.
You get
that
it.
Kind of, you know, that's very timely, Bill, because I have
you
to tell
mow
you.
Lawn.
Yeah. No, I was teaching my daughter this weekend how to mow the lawn.
Very good.
All right.
All right. Zero turn.
All right. She wants to get, you know, to she's desperate for some, you know, some
good.
Money. Some
sure.
money, frankly,
good.
Right?
Very
good
good
incentive.
Like
very
I
focused.
Like I like that.
So she said she volunteered where my oldest son just like he's got no interest right now. So he's not but he saves his money, so she spends hers, right? But she's very focused on learning how to mow the lawn and you know, so that example appeals
good
to
analogy.
Me. Yeah, it's very good. So but right now, Bill, we do have to take a break, our last break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Bill Gormley, chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And we'll talk a little bit about DOD's current plans and what's going on in the policy area there. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Adobe Acrobat Pro is actually used very commonly for PDF archiving. If you've got a lot of files of different formats and different types, if you just save these files into all these different formats, then 20 years later, somebody wants to look at the file, they'd actually have to have the program that could open up that file. So for digital archiving, you'd rather have a standardized file format.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hours Conversation with Authors series, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness. How do you evaluate the effectiveness of citizen participation programs? Is the Open Government Initiative making a difference? Join host Michael Keegan as he pulls back the veil on how to best evaluate citizen participation. He talks with Dr. Tina Nabachi, author of the recent IBM Center report, A Manager's Guide to Evaluating Citizen Participation, next week on the Business of Government Hours.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
What does it take to go from good government to great? When one agency decided to modernize an old financial system, several departments struggled to transition effectively. But one office resolved $718 million worth of systematic financial errors to quickly become an agency-wide model for new system adoption.
Visit myacuity.com/realresults to learn more. Acuity, your vision, our focus.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov. Brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
The Ballistic Missile Report, provided by Raytheon.
Recently, the U.S. Navy awarded Raytheon Company a $106.4 million modification award for the production of Aegis-related equipment, including the SPY-1 DV radar transmitter and Mark 99 Mod 14 fire control system. With this modification, Raytheon continues its long history of reliable manufacturing of these two essential components, which are both key elements of the Aegis systems. These components have been in production for more than 30 years as part of the U.S. Navy's Aegis shipbuilding program.
5 million hours of experience, 19 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3, When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon's Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Join the Association for Federal Information Resources Management Awards Luncheon and celebrate as they applaud achievement in the federal IT community. The annual Affirm Leadership Awards recognize individuals and groups who are leading innovation in government. The awards will be given out on Thursday, June 14, 2012, at the Affirm Leadership Awards Luncheon at the Capitol Hilton, 1001 16th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. Register today at affirm.org.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Bill Gormley. Bill is the chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And we've been talking about, you know, some of the dialogue, Mythbusters dialogue at our spring, at the Coalition Spring Conference last week. And Bill, Shay Assad spoke to the conference on Friday morning, and he talked a lot about what DOD is focusing on in terms of its policies. And, you know, in particular, he talked about what they're doing with regard to contract pricing. He talked a little bit about, you know, GSA's role. What were your observations with regard to Shay's comments?
So we're off lawn mowing right now?
Yes, we've, okay, yeah, we're done the lawn mowers.
No mowers.
I probably have to go back today and give my daughter another lesson.
All right.
Do the backyard.
Anyway, and levity to the show here. Anyway, in regards to Shay, first of all, here's someone who could clearly talk about compassion and understand, and he has that, and he's, you know, they're very fortunate to have him in his position, because he, with no notes or anything, just could continue to talk about.
It was very impressive. Yeah.
Did a great job. In regards to the pricing side, I think is with Shay, I mean, he's clearly, you know, putting the kind of the pedal to the metal, so to speak, throughout the whole organization of, hey, we have to do a better job of pricing. And he's setting up various elements within the department to take on some of those responsibilities, Roger, to support the contracting office and the program manager. So they're clearly, you know, it's in the crosshairs with him as far as getting this pricing done. And again, with the reduction of budget, and the market's going to shrink on them, they're looking to leverage every aspect that they can out of the out of every dollar appropriated to them. So, and he also feels that he sees that there's going to be an increased need for the GSA type services, because, you know, his department has, as big as it is, has a limited amount of resources. And, you know, what GSA provides, a lot of that is consumed. I mean, my last data point was like 65% of the DOD represents of GSA's market. So there's, you know,
GSA's number one customer is the Department of Defense.
Sure. So. And it may sound logical here, but I mean, in certain programs they may not, but in the Skittles program they are. And I think he sees that as a growth area. And, you know, I think he's actually reached out to them, he indicated, to do a pilot or something. Was that on cost?
Yeah. What do you think of that? It's a pilot for the schedules of cost reimbursement type contracts.
Well, I hope that Steve Kemp and his next gen would figure a way to put that in there. And I think there's an opportunity for have that added, you know, cost reimbursement to the schedules program. I think there were some other things that were talked about with not to digress from Shay, but with the schedules is the ODCs and what was the other one, Roger? We had like three or four things we were talking to Steve about. If you remember.
Excuse me. The price reduction clause.
Price reduction clause.
And
yeah.
That's role. We talked about that a little bit
TAA,
earlier in terms of
TAA.
Trade Agreements Act.
There's like three or four things that hopefully in this next gen, if they can get cranked in there that program will be a significant value add throughout government. It puts sales aside. Some people confuse that's all GSA's interest. It's not. Sales, like anything, is a leading indicator whether the program's successful or not. So, right. You know, you may think you've built the best program, but if people aren't using it, then something's wrong. So I think here, making those changes or addressing those, you know, the ODCs, the TAA, price reduction clause, all that in there will
ODCs, other direct costs, yeah, right?
Excuse me. Yeah. Yep, get my acronyms going here. But
hey, well, you know, I know you spent 30 years in government, right. Bill. Yeah, you can't good. Get, you know, once you use acronyms, it's like
we love talking ends. Acronyms. Can't right. say. But anyway, on to Shea though. Shea clearly when we actually got into the low price technically acceptable with him, and he's clearly looking. He was emphatic that the department's view is best value. Period. And he was just. He couldn't be over more emphatic than like saying that's it. So there's nothing out there.
But from his perspective, that best value is along that continuum. That could be a best value. Could be, you know, if the requirements are well defined, sure. It could be a low cost type acquisition.
Yep.
But the key, I think, you know, from his perspective, is probably the requirements and what are those.
Yeah, he was clearly that one area. You know, we can talk about training the contracting people and hiring more contracting people or better contract management. But he has also identified, which I think a lot of us would argue is a key factor that's commonly overlooked, is the development of the requirements by the program managers. And there's clearly an emphasis to getting the program managers more engaged on understanding what's needed by contracting or the contracting folks before a requirement goes out.
Now, was contract duplication an issue discussed at the conference?
I'm glad you brought that up. The contract duplication, and I think collectively, all the speakers who are in government positions, no one wants, based on their conversation, no one wanted to increase the number of contracts, period. And that was good to hear. And it was also the fact it was consistent, which in government sometimes there's not enough of that. And I think the consistency. And so I think here, I think one of the examples was someone had within one agency, there was like 4,000 contracts for, I will use the term, cell phones.
Well, thank you for that, Bill. I appreciate that.
And so,
you say wireless devices or
right,
whatever.
Yeah, right. It is a cell phone. So anyway, 4,000. So there's kind of a, you know, there is clearly contract duplication. God, if the government could just work at reducing what's being duplicated, would be a huge saving, Roger, to all members of the community.
Right. Well, when you talk about 4,000 contracts for self, I mean, that's mind-boggling to me that one agency would have that. That is fundamentally a waste of money in terms of the duplicative administrative costs, bid and proposal costs. You know, and Shea clearly understands because he talked about, you know, the bid and proposal costs and how important those are to a company in terms of their going to market. Obviously, that's what they use to go to market in terms of competing for requirements. And the more contracts, the more you're, you know, using up that gold that companies use to compete. So, I would agree with you. Contract duplication was a big topic of discussion at the conference. And I think it's one where, you know, the coalition is doing a survey of our members to identify the costs associated with contract duplication. And, you know, we plan on, you know, sharing that with the procurement community to get another Mythbusters dialogue going on how we can better, you know, sort of leverage everybody's resources. Because ultimately, with contract duplication, you know, government pays, contractors pay, but ultimately the taxpayers pays.
Right.
So, you know, Bill, the time always goes real fast. I have so much to talk about.
We just got here.
Yeah, it seems like that's the case. But I want to thank Bill Gormley for joining me today on Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This is Roger Waldron, and everybody have a great day out there.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.